friends, and thanks for listening to the Capital City Soccer Show, your independent source for everything Austin FC. On today's show, we're going to talk about the Austin FC jersey, which launched this week. We're also going to go through a fantasy Austin FC expansion draft with our friends Chris Wellhausen and Chris Haig. And we're also going to go through a few more other bits of Austin FC news. So, as always, I'm Landon Cottom, and I'm joined by Mr. Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey, everybody. I'm Jeremiah Bentley. And so Landon and I both had the chance to go through some of the listener statistics around the show and found, I think, two really interesting pieces of information about where apparently we're really, really big. And I'm going to go with the one that's farther away. At one point, a couple weeks ago, we were the 12th most popular soccer podcast in all of Nigeria, which I thought was pretty great. Share that information with James Ruth because it was the one he was on. He was thrilled about it. He's happy to be a big deal in Nigeria. But did you look at the actual numbers?
Yeah, it was like, was it like 4 downloads total?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was 4. It was 4 in a week. So if you're like, if that's what you're shooting for, you know, go for that. You'll be a big deal there. And so thank you to those 4 people or 1 person 4 times or 2 people on 2 platforms. Like, I don't care, however you do it. But then we also had another place that was pretty big too, in Centennial, Colorado. And did you do some research on Centennial?
Yeah, so it's like Denver suburb, like pretty far on the outskirts of like the urban sprawl of Denver. I was looking for soccer connections there. It looks like there's some like youth soccer academy affiliate of the Colorado Rapids that's in Centennial, but that's all I could find. And so any theories on why we have... So, and this was not 4 downloads. This was like over 100 downloads, like over the span of the whole show, right?
Yeah, it was over 100, like 125 or something. I found some, I think a random defender from Centennial who doesn't play for Nashville also that was a native, but I have no idea why. So really we would, if you are in or around Centennial, Colorado, and you listen to the show, like we would love to hear from you. Reach out to us. Tell us what you like or what you don't like, or
and tell us, you know, why, like why and how, and I just don't understand. But yeah, we'd be fascinated to know.
Yeah.
All right. Let's jump into some Austin FC news, just really quickly. Austin FC Academy is still doing really well. They beat Houston Dynamo 4-1, and then RGV Toros 2-1. That's the U15 team. I believe the younger groups have mostly been doing well too. So it's good to see them continue to do well. They've also, I think this happened a couple of weeks ago, but we didn't mention it on the show, that they have a new partnership with Classics Elite Soccer Club in San Antonio, which is a very interesting thing to hear that they're expanding out into other cities and putting together partnerships with some of these, just top clubs in other cities, and then also holding tryouts in Brownsville, Texas. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of stuff comes out of those partnerships. Another exciting bit is coaching staff updates. So Nolan Sheldon from DC United and Rodrigo Rios from Atlanta United have both joined as assistant coaches on Wolf's staff. So any reaction or any thoughts about those coaching hires, Jeremiah?
I thought it was, they have very different backgrounds in terms of their path to Austin. They had the common denominator of being coaches of teams that did not make the playoffs, which I think is usually what makes you an available assistant coach for an MLS club. But yeah, Sheldon spent 10 years in DC United, first team assistant coach for the last 4 years, played as a youth player, played in college. He seems to have a really strong background in MLS and as an assistant in MLS as a first team assistant. And then while on the other hand, Rios from Atlanta United really has a lot more of a youth and academy background. He's from Chile, became a Atlanta United Academy coach in 2016, then coached the U17 team. But from what I could tell in the press release, I don't know if you read it in detail, but it looks like he's also going to be a first team assistant coach.
Yeah, that's what it read in the press release. And I think he was also part of the first team coaching staff under Tata Martino, and then maybe like moved back to the academy after Martino left. But I was looking up some stuff about Rios. I wasn't able to find a ton of information, but I'm guessing he will have worked with Tyler Wolf, which is Josh Wolf's son, at the Atlanta United Academy. So that's maybe a connection there. They will at least know each other, if not having worked together a lot, Tyler and Rodrigo. But Nolan Sheldon, one thing that stood out to me is Pablo Maurer, who writes for The Athletic and covers DC United quite a bit. He mentioned whenever, what was DC's coach's name? Ben Olsen. So whenever Ben Olsen was fired, Pablo Maurer tweeted out that he wouldn't be surprised if Nolan Sheldon got like a temporary head coaching position with the club until they hired someone else. And then after it was announced that Sheldon was hired by Austin FC, he mentioned that again. He said, I thought Sheldon would have been a really great pick for, if not a temporary coaching position, at least be interviewed for like the permanent position. So someone as smart as Pablo and as knows DC United as much as Pablo does, it's really encouraging to see how much he thinks of Nolan Sheldon. So yeah, excited to see what these guys will do for Austin FC. Do we want to talk about the super draft, Jeremiah? Can cover it quickly, huh?
Yeah, I think so. Just okay. what it is and that it's coming up. We don't have to talk too much about it, but it's another chance to add more than one player at a time to the roster, right? And especially with what you get out of it, you get squad depth. So I think we'll talk about it a little bit.
Yeah. So later on in the show, we're going to talk about the expansion draft. We're certainly going to get down into the weeds of the expansion draft. And, but the super draft is going to be coming up later on this year. Do you know the date of that, Jeremiah?
They haven't announced the date yet. It's usually right around Inauguration Day, which I don't understand why that is, but they're expecting it to be either January 19th or 21st.
Okay. So, yeah, essentially, Jeff Reuter and Sam Stajkul wrote an article for The Athletic recently talking about the super draft, and they're going to cut down the number of rounds it is. So it's historically been 4 rounds over the last several years. They're going to cut it down to 3 this year. One of the reasons being is in 2019, 8 teams opted to just not choose a player in the third round, and then 13 teams opted to not choose a player in the fourth round. So the super draft just isn't what it used to be, right?
Yeah, and I don't understand why it was ever called the super draft. And I think we talked about this on Twitter. Like, what exactly makes it that?
I think super. It was just like MLS trying to make things sound exciting. I don't know.
It's everything from, so it's been around since the start. That seems like a 1996 MLS kind of name.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like the very start, but I think it's been around for a long time. And like for a long time, that was a good way to get really good players, right? And in the United States, college was still a really viable option to go the pro route. And it still can be, but it's less and less the preferred way to go. And so I would say like you can still get good players out of the draft, but you're not going to get 4 rounds of 27 teams worth of good players out of the draft. So Daryl Dike he was first round pick last year, and he's been a really good player this year. So you can still get a good player, but we shouldn't expect too much. But if we can get 1 or 2 decent players out of it, then yeah, that's definitely worth it. But if you go further past that, you might think like, oh, we'll just take a flyer and just pick a guy. But you're essentially hiring someone. You're like, I'm going to pay you to come do this. And it's a pool of candidates that aren't necessarily qualified for the job. So you're better off doing it elsewhere. But yeah, it's still a way to get players. So that'll be interesting. Another interesting thing to look forward to.
And will you do a mock 3-hour no. mock draft with people on Slack trying to figure that out too, or no?
No, the mock draft we're going to do later in the show. I had to do a lot of homework just to know what I was talking about for the MLS one, but for college soccer, I've not seen a game of college soccer probably in the last several years, if ever. I don't even know if I've ever watched a game of college men's soccer. So yeah, we won't be doing that. We'll cover the players after they're picked, but we're not doing a mock draft. All right, let's jump into, I think, one of the most exciting topics of the show is the Austin FC jersey. So before we do that, we're actually going to bring on a friend of ours, Brock Williams, who you've heard that name on our show before. He is probably for several things. One of the things being his Twitter campaigns for various things that he wants the club to do. And he's achieved most of them, which is kind of the scary thing about it. And then the other is that he's very much into the pitch and everything that Weston Applefeller is doing for the team. So he's also very into design and just like likes jerseys and is a really smart and interesting guy to talk about that kind of stuff. So we're going to have him on the show. So Brock, come on in.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate y'all having me on. It's been quite a couple months here as far as developments with the club goes, but I really, really appreciate it. Looking forward to talking about some soccer kits.
So quickly before we jump into jerseys, your Twitter campaigns. So the first one was the Make ATX, like the TV abbreviation.
Oh, the ticker, this scoreboard ticker. I think it's just obvious that like anything other than ATX would just be a travesty, like staring at it on a screen. Like it would just annoy most Austinites to look up there and see like AUS. We wouldn't even focus on the game. We would just be annoyed the whole time. So
We haven't gotten that one completely confirmed, but it seems like it's headed in the right direction.
All signs are headed that direction. Yeah. Yeah.
The other one was getting cameras inside the stadium. Yeah. So we didn't get a static camera, but we are getting a lot of footage from inside the stadium and the grass installation.
I'm glad the club decided to kind of meet me at least halfway so far. So we'll see.
Let's jump into jersey talk then. So Brock, what were your initial reaction to seeing the jersey come out?
Initial reaction was I am very pleased. I'm really excited with the way it looks. You know, I think going into it, if you had been paying like a ton of attention to like a lot of the marketing campaigns and things that have kind of been coming out for like the last year, a lot of the kind of cards they're putting out with like the Cecilio announcement, the Pride patch, those little things, they were utilizing a lot of like vertical striping. And so I think it was at that point, it was kind of easy to see where they were headed. But you know, until you see it, you don't know. You just make these educated guesses of what you think they want to do. At the same time, like I think they definitely played it on the safer side for Austin, but at the same time, like it's a little more adventurous than most teams are going to get for their first kit. So I think they laid a pretty solid foundation and gave themselves a lot of like wiggle room moving forward. But like it's a great classic first kit look. So that was my initial.
Yeah, I think the like classic and simple in that it's stripes, but it's still a splash just because of the colors. Like that green just like makes it stand out, and like it always is going to. And so even if you take a really simple design and put that color on it, it's going to stand out.
I agree. But let's talk about how Adidas decides to lay like bizarre filters over every product on their website. And so when I woke up that morning, of course, the first thing I do is just like, oh, let's see if it's leaked. And I immediately, you know, go on Twitter and someone had posted the Adidas and it looks like someone had just drug it through mud or something. Like it was the most dull green.
Yeah, so bad.
And you know, I didn't mind it leaking through Adidas. That's fine. But at the same time, the color balance was so off on that photo. Like I was like, this surely can't be the green. And so when photos started to come out as the day went on, I was like, all right, that's what we want.
Yeah.
It looks good.
Yeah. When you saw the corrective photos and then whenever you see the thing in person, like in real life, like that green pops, like you see it. And so I think regardless of what you think about the jersey overall, like whenever you see that team come out onto the field, like it's going to look nice. Yep. And if you turn on the TV, you know, that's Austin playing. Like there's never going to be a mistake of like, oh, what team is this? Is it one of the other white jerseys, the other black jerseys? Or whatever, like, no, this is Austin.
Yeah.
Because you're going to see that green from wherever you are.
And even when, you know, you see a lot of people talking about Sassuolo and in Italy, and it's such a different green than those greens. Like those are just like true Kelly greens, whereas this is just some kind of, you know, you don't see this green very often. So it's fun.
Yeah. So let's go back to the Adidas launch. So you said you woke up in the morning and saw it. I woke up at like three, my dog woke me up at like 3:45 and I couldn't go back to sleep. And so I got my phone out, was going to look at whatever, Twitter or whatever. And my like browser was open and I've been looking at the Adidas store the night before. And so that was there. I was like, oh, I'm going to check it out and see if it's on there. And I looked and I was like, oh, it's there. And then I looked on Twitter and was like, nobody's posted about this yet. I don't think this is supposed to have happened. And so I like my first instinct was to tweet it and like, I'm the first person to tweet the jersey. And then yeah. I was like, I don't want to be that person. It's like telling a little kid what he's getting for Christmas the day before and like ruining the surprise. Yeah. And so I don't want to be that guy. So I sent it to James Ruth. And so like, hey, James, I think this is an accident. You might want to talk to them. And I think it was too late, but.
Hold on. Did you send that to James at 3:45 in the morning?
I did. Yeah. He responded at like 6 a.m. So he didn't see it immediately, but, yeah. Anyway, the whole bucket hat and like turtleneck thing. Yeah. What did y'all think about that whole look that they chose?
Not a fan. I'll just say it out there. Well, what was funny is I had been like both with the Fanatics and Adidas website about 4 or 5 days before, I had probably spent like 2 hours just trying to like backdoor my way into trying to like find out like find the jersey by like changing URLs and trying to find like product numbers and trying to find patterns in it. Couldn't do it, unfortunately, but like it turned out, yeah, the Adidas place was where the page was hidden. And when they turned that on, I bet they had it like set to a date or a timestamp, like, oh, it's gonna launch on this day, so we'll set it. And then it came on and then it was like, well, not supposed to happen yet. But
yeah, with the launch day, we went over to I met some people over at, what's it called? Easy Tiger, the new Easy Tiger location where they had the Verde van. And we ran into some of the people from the front office there and asked them about the, like the bucket hat and the turtleneck. And it's like, I wanted to see if they like knew about that, if that was going to be the case. And they didn't seem like they knew that's what it was going to look like on the page. And they didn't seem super happy about it.
If I were them, I would have gone out and bought a ton of white bucket hats and turtlenecks and put them in the Verde van just for like people, just as like.
Yeah. I think I saw the same people later that morning. And we talked about that a little bit. It's bad when like, we like in our Slack, on our Lars Verde Slack, they're like, well, yeah, you see the official stuff, but wait until we post like random fan pictures and you get a lot better impression of what the jersey looks like than like whatever, you know, whatever Adidas paid to like make that happen.
Yeah.
Too.
What else do we want to cover in the jersey? Was there any other social media responses that we wanted to agree with or rebuke?
I mean, I think we just could talk about them being mixed, as always social media responses are. Brock, I do love what you said about the sponsors. Like, I think we should get that in.
Yeah, so you said you saw people saying that they didn't want the Yeti sponsor on there.
Yeah.
Are these just, like, non-soccer fans that didn't understand that that's just, like, part of a soccer jersey?
Well, that's what's so, I think, interesting about Austin FC and just, like, this launch and this market is, like, you have a ton of people that, you know, may not be fully aware of like the soccer world and that this is pretty much a given thing that you're going to have a sponsor across the front of your jersey. And so you see a brand just like right across the front and people are confused, like, wait, you know, am I supposed to be a walking billboard? And the answer to that is yes. That's exactly what you are. And so you'll see people that, like, I saw it numerous times where people on Twitter would be like, well, is there any way I can get one without the sponsor? And what's funny is, like, long-term soccer fans, you're like, as far as Yeti goes, you're kind of like, you don't know how good you have it with Yeti across the front. You know, yeah, in MLS, yeah, you get a telecom, a finance company, a health conglomerate, an airline, or a pyramid scheme. Those are your five options. And so the fact that we get this kind of like outdoor luxury brand, you know, so just something that's like genuinely Austin as it comes. And just something that, I mean, one, they're a company that started like this massive company off a cooler. So if you want to align yourself with a company that's going to like go from nothing to huge quickly, like, it's like the perfect sponsor. So like, I'm actually proud to wear Yeti.
It also just looks sharp, right? Like, mm-hmm. You can get some really like, really bad looking sponsors on jerseys sometimes. And like, if you don't know what Yeti is and you look at that shirt, like, it looks good.
Yep. Lots of clean lines. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And apparently it was quite a hit because the club announced the next day that I always love these like stats that I didn't know even were stats, but it's a record number of expansion team first day jersey sales, which I believe is
west of the Mississippi, I believe. Yeah.
Still, it was good. People were excited and bought a lot of them. So like people couldn't hate them too much. I thought that was really cool. And another thing that they did that I really liked was they put a Twitter. Wait, what? It's not a Twitter story. What are we calling it now?
Oh,
Twitter fleet thing. It's like a fleet.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? Yeah. One of those with people that took their pictures of their uniform of Austin, which I think I hate that idea, but I like seeing a bunch of my friends in their like jerseys and like the things that they use to define their lives together.
Yeah. It's just, it's been, I think the whole launch has been really cool. And like the phrase, the uniform for Austin, I was like, whenever they first started teasing that, I wasn't super sold on it. I was like, I don't know what the phrase just kind of sounds strange. But once you start seeing what all that was and like what, like the whole campaign and what all they plan to do with it, and then what fans have taken and turned it into, it's just been a really cool thing to see. And like, in a way that I'm usually like a big marketing skeptic, and I like ad campaigns don't usually do a lot for me. And I rarely like see one that I'm like, okay, I like that. And this turned out to be something really cool that I'm pretty like, I don't know. I'm pretty high on it.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say on the fan version of that, so I probably saw 25 of those, you know, and it was like different friends of mine and people I knew. And it was really cool to just learn about, you know, their interests and how they defined themselves and how everybody really set it out. Cause everybody had, you know, 6, 8, 10 items that were personally important to them that sort of defined their personality. It was a really cool way to like learn what people are into.
Yeah. To clarify for people, I imagine most of the people listening to this have seen it, but they did this like still images or like videos from overhead of the jersey laying on the ground, and then did like the uniform of this person, the uniform of this person. And so they had like Willie Nelson and had like a guitar and his guitar strap. And then there was like
some ambiance,
mysterious smoke flowing over the top of it. And then they had McConaughey's, and it was like some of his movies and some bongos. And then they did Cecilio and Rodney. They had the Paraguayan flag and a mate and like all this stuff. And
they added Alvin Dodeau as well, who's like a local like fly fishing legend, like sponsored by Orvis, a bunch of other people. And that one like came out of nowhere. Like, so they even added some local celebs in this one that they hadn't really like alluded to up until this point, which I thought was cool.
Yeah. And so they keep for several days, they were like rolling out these like the stills. So like in the video, they flash by pretty quickly. And so they would roll out these stills of this is this person's, and you got to really look at it and see it. And so, yeah, fans started building their own and laying their jersey on the floor and putting things that were important to them around it. And so I don't know that the club ever intended for that to be a thing, but the way that it built was pretty special, I think. I think one other thing I should mention is we wanted to get like a designer's take on it. And so I sent Ryan Riggins, who was designed all of the Austin Anthem stuff in the early days, and I think still does most of it. And so he's got a really good design eye. And so I just wanted to see what he thought about it all. And he said that he thinks that the stripes are great, really strong brand element. I think it's a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about. But Ryan Riggins liked it, and I think that's a good enough stamp of approval for me.
That works.
You know, and one of the other benefits of starting in 2021 as opposed to 2020 is that we did not have to start with the over the shoulder tri-stripe. Like, you know, I'm so thankful. I mean, like, it looks fine and it was cool for the 25th anniversary, but man, I like, at least we get something a little more like classic and unique as opposed to like, you know, Adidas started with Nashville just started with a blank yellow thing with some three stripes over the shoulder. I mean,
I think some of the three stripes things look cool, but maybe like half of them do.
Yeah.
And I think the other half looks like it was a design element that was shoehorned in without any real reason for it to be there.
Real quick, going back to the marketing thing, I feel like this got lost in the shuffle of like launch day, but I don't know how many people actually got to pay attention or get to see the actual Yeti launch video, which was unbelievable. And like, I feel like I just want to like set that, like, call that out right now. Like, if you haven't gone and seen that, you need to go watch that video, because that was one of the coolest things I've seen.
Yep. All right. I think that's enough for the jersey. So, Brock, thanks so much for joining us. This was great.
Thanks, guys, for having me. That was awesome.
All right. It's always good to talk to you, Brock Williams. Jeremiah, let's move on real quick to some sponsorship updates. So do you mind running us through those real quick?
Yeah, and I know this is something that we haven't talked a lot about as we have more on-field news, but three of the recent sponsorship announcements really have some interesting thing that I think fans would care about. So today they announced, today being the 23rd of November, the club announced HEB is the official grocery partner, which who knew you needed that, but one of the interesting things out of that is there will be an HEB Plaza, which is an on-site sort of fan zone activation thing, which fits with something we talked about a couple shows ago, I think, when we talked about
that one.
Yeah, that's really, I wanted to include this just so I could say I was right, basically. So yes, there will be a fan zone and they won't be the stadium sponsor. Another one that we, came up a couple weeks ago is the Fairmont Austin. And that was the official hotel partner. But the thing that I don't think we really noticed then was that they're also going to be the base of operations for the first team players and coaching staff from January 2021 until they move to the St. David's Performance Center on Parmer. So that'd be a nice benefit. I might wish for a construction slowdown if I was.
Yeah, let you stay in that office for a little bit longer.
And I love that being the road place too, because I would like other teams to come to Austin and get the full experience of 6th Street in downtown before playing against us.
Yeah, go spend a night on 6th Street before you play.
Yeah, and then the third and final one, we talked a little bit about Netspend being the stadium payment partner and like what that might look like. And there was a recent interview where they, PYMNTS.com, interviewed the president, and it said that they would be in-app and mobile wallet. So there will be electronic payment options in the stadium in addition to like having the card, which was good news.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so Jeremiah, you haven't heard the next segment we're going to play yet. So we recorded this the other night. So we had our friends Chris Haig and Chris Wellhausen jump on to do MLS fantasy expansion draft, or like a mock expansion draft. And so we'll explain in the show like kind of where this idea came from. But Jeremiah, do you have any questions, or do you think we should explain this anymore since you haven't heard it either?
I think that this is going to be just an amazing MLS experience, and we should just let it stand on its own.
Okay. It is the nerdiest thing that we will have done on this show, but I think in a good way. I think this is it's a good thought exercise to learn about, like, what is this draft going to look like, and what are we going to get out of it? And so after we got done recording, so we chose three players apiece, ended up with 9 individual names. And I asked the Chris's at the end, like, what's the chances of us getting 2 of these players right? And Chris Wellhausen just immediately responded, very low. And so, I don't know how many we'll get right, but I think it's we're going to get close on like the types of players that we could get. So hopefully you guys enjoy this. If not, please don't hold it over our heads how many that we got wrong, because we don't know what's going to happen. But we had a lot of fun doing it, so we hope you guys enjoy listening to it. And we'll take a quick break and be right back with the fantasy expansion draft. Our guests today are Chris Haig and Chris Wellhausen, and we're going to do a little MLS fantasy expansion draft. So, Chris's, would you mind introducing yourselves to our listeners, because you are new on the show, and I just want to put some names to voices.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having us on. My name is Chris Haig. I am just a Austin FC fan, resident of Austin for about a little over 4 years now. So I'm pumped to have an MLS team right here in town. I've been an MLS fan for a long time and played fantasy MLS for the past 5 or 6 years. So I've really kind of kept up with the league and that sort of thing. So especially thinking about the fantasy draft or expansion draft, I've been thinking about the fantasy game and I'm excited to talk about players and possibilities.
And
yeah, Lane, thanks for having us on, man. Yeah, Chris Wellhausen, you know, couldn't make it more, you know, easy to follow with 2 people with the same name on the show, right? But local Austinite, lover of soccer. So like the second this team was announced, you know, I was just losing my mind. I've been so pumped following it along, but people may know me from many different avenues, you know, probably, you know, as a published author on the Los Verdes blog, you know, so you've probably seen me rant on Twitter as well. You know, follow me at Chris Wellhausen. It's a good follow, I promise. But no, nah, man, I'm a huge MLS nerd, and I'm so excited to chat about the expansion draft with you guys. It's going to be fun.
So the inspiration for this segment on the show was something that you guys decided to do. Was it last weekend or a couple of weeks ago that you were kind enough to invite me to, which is, it's going to sound extremely nerdy, but we spent 3.5 hours on a weekend doing a fantasy expansion draft on a Zoom call.
Yeah, I don't know why you're saying it like that. I felt like it was a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, it's
a
not nerdy at all. It was a great way to spend a Saturday night.
Yeah, cool and normal way for 30-something year old men to spend a Saturday night. But yeah, so it ended up being a lot of fun, and we all really enjoyed doing it, and thought like this could be a cool segment to have on the show. So we just decided to like bring the whole thing to the show. So we're not going to take 3.5 hours. So we had to change up the format a little bit to make it fit within this podcast format.
No promises, but there, Landon.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. But yeah, we're just gonna do our own little fantasy expansion draft here to hopefully get an idea of what us FC fans can expect from this expansion draft that's coming up here in the next couple of weeks. So, Chris Haig, would you mind running us through kind of the format and the rules of the expansion draft real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. I know you guys covered it recently on the show on a recent episode of the pod, but I'll go over kind of some basics and then a couple of quirky things because it is MLS, so we have some strange rules as well. So the expansion draft is happening on December 15th. There are 5 rounds, so Austin will be able to choose 5 players from 5 different teams. So they can't pick more than one player from a given team. There are 10 teams who are exempt from the draft because they had players taken in last year's expansion draft. So that leaves 16 teams that Austin FC can choose from. A really important point is that it's not a free-for-all with all players, right? There's protected players. So each team can protect up to 12 players. And there are some automatic exemptions or protected players, which include homegrown players who are under 25 and Generation Adidas players. That eligible players list will be announced on December 14th. So just a day before the draft, so it doesn't give us a whole lot of time to think about it. And then another important day is just the day before, on the 13th, there's a half day trade window. So I'm sure there'll be some transactions happening on that day. So the rosters, as we look at them right now, might look different on expansion draft day on the 15th of December. And then a couple of other kind of quirky things, because it is MLS, free agents are eligible in the draft. So if they're selected, Austin FC would just gain the ability to negotiate a new contract with that player. If they're not selected, then that free agency period opens on December 16th, right after the expansion draft. Also, if Austin chooses a player from a team that's under contract, that contract just gets transferred over to Austin FC, to the new club. And then one small quirk, because MLS teams have the senior roster and then supplemental and reserve rosters. If Austin would choose a player from a supplemental or reserve roster, then that player has to be offered a senior roster position. So if there are younger kind of promising players, Austin FC would really have to kind of commit and then offer that player a senior position.
And if that was confusing, it's because this is MLS, baby. Exactly, and nothing exactly. is easy and nothing makes sense.
Yeah, if it's MLS, it has to be complicated, but it's also like going back to the protecting 12 players, like keep that in mind as we're giving you our picks, because like, don't tweet at us, why didn't you pick Carlos Vela? It's like, it's going to be like the bottom half of a team essentially that you're choosing from. But you can get good value out of an expansion draft. So I thought it'd be interesting to look back at past drafts and look at some notable selections. I think strategy wise, like just trying to look at what a good expansion draft strategy is, it would be interesting to look at one team that did a good job and one team that did a bad job. And so I think the obvious example of unobvious example of a good job was LAFC. So we mentioned this on the last show, but they ended up getting Tyler Miller. He ended up starting 34 games for them in 2018, and he wasn't the best keeper in the league, but they were probably the best team in the league that year and one of the best teams in MLS history. And he was the guy for them. Another one, Latif Blessing, who has been one of their most important players for the last 3 years. Another thing to keep in mind on strategy is these players' salary. So MLS is a salary capped league. Latif Blessing was on $110,000 a year, which is not a ton of money for a guy who plays as much and as influential as he is to that team. And so those two are really big picks. They also picked Marco Ureña. He ended up having some injuries and was maybe like a slight disappointment just based on his past and what his potential was. But he ended up being released after that season. So that was maybe a disappointment, but I think that's still not necessarily a bad pick just because of what he had done in the past. And then their other two picks, they actually ended up trading to Montreal for Laurent Simon, who I believe only played with them for 1 year, but they ended up selling him to a team in France for $500,000. So even just flipping it for that value is really, really good business. A bad example is going to be FC Cincinnati. They did it. Not all of it was entirely their fault, but they did it about as bad as you could. Their first pick was Darren Maddox, whose salary as of 2019 was $520,000, which is much higher than Latif Blessing's. He ended up scoring 3 goals and had 3 assists in 2019. Then early 2020 was charged with insurance fraud and hasn't played in the 2020 season. Then they picked Kai Kamara and traded him to the Rapids for an international spot. I don't know if that's a good deal. Like, what's an international spot worth, right? Like, I guess it's worth what you pay for it, but I don't know if that was like,
how did they use it? Right.
Like, yeah. That's
right. You get an international slot, but then what do you do with it?
Right. They also picked, Roland Lemah from, I believe he was at Dallas. Is that right? He had 1 goal, 3 assists and was on $800,000 a year. He got released at the end of the 2019 season. Then I'm going to skip their 4th pick and go to their 5th pick and come back. Hassan Ndam never played in 2019 and spent most of the 2019 season and the 2020 season on loan to USL teams. Their number 4 pick was Eric Alexander. He had 6 appearances. They ended up cutting him before the end of the season. He went to Dallas, never appeared for Dallas, and I don't believe he is a professional soccer player anymore. And he's still just 32, and it does not seem to be for injuries or for anything like that. Maybe it was, but I couldn't find any record of that. But they essentially picked a guy who 2 years later is no longer playing professional soccer. And so,
yikes.
Yeah.
You know, one thing, Landon, I would add on to that is for context, if anyone's kind of new to the league, this isn't the NBA. If a player is making 800 grand or really upwards of 500 grand a year, that's an investment.
Yeah.
Like, because of the strict salary cap rules, anyone over 500, you are like shifting things around to make room for. So when you hear that FC Cincinnati was paying, you know, 520 grand for Darren Maddox and then 800 grand for Lemah, it's just like obvious red flags.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Because of the salary cap, like some of these owners can afford to pay these guys more. They're just not allowed to. And so it changes the market a little bit. And yeah, $500,000 in this league is a lot of money for a non DP player. So yeah, that's good context. Thanks for adding that.
I was just going to say one other interesting thing to think about strategy a little bit, like with that LAFC, the way they acquired Simon, right? I don't know. I'd have to go back and look. I don't know if Montreal was a part of that expansion draft, but they probably would have protected Simon anyways, right? He was a pretty important piece of their team. But if you think about some of those 10 teams who are exempt, if Austin FC, if they're looking at players from those teams and they really want a player, they might be able to swing a deal where they like choose 2 players from teams who are eligible and then trade them for another player from one of those 10 teams that they wouldn't be able to pick from anyways, or yeah, another team. So I think, yeah, don't expect that the five players that are picked end up with Austin FC, right? They could easily be traded away for somebody else.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you could find value, it doesn't necessarily have to be a player that's going to fit with our team. If you can find value, that's a player that's valuable to another team, then you can turn it into value for yourself. So yeah, that's a good point. So that's one strategy in the draft. And then as far as what we can expect, Chris Wilhausen, do you want to give our listeners kind of an idea of what we can expect to get out of this draft?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think most fans of the league go into this and think like, okay, you only get five players. All these teams are exempt. They get to protect so many, like, oh, we're not going to get anyone of quality here. I'm going to go and get that out of my face. Okay. No way. Like, if you really look at recent years, like the big thing worth noting is MLS rosters have gotten deeper. And over the past 5 years alone, they've really started to expand what kind of financial resources each team can leverage. And the reason I mention that is because the deeper the rosters get, the more likely you're to get someone like a Latif Blessing or a Tyler Miller, who are both highly rated at their teams, but we're just on the outskirts of that 12 protected, right? So I think we've got a really good chance. And I'm fully in the boat that like Austin FC fans should expect, like we could get a starter out of this. You could definitely get a couple of depth players. And like Chris was referencing, you know, expect a trade. Claudio Reyna's already mentioned in an interview that he's been approached from certain teams about discussions on a trade. And there's a lot of teams in the league with a lot of weaknesses that are very obvious that they may not normally have the means to easily negotiate a deal. So he can leverage that through this draft. And I think the last thing to expect is, and it's a bit of personal bias here just because I think it's the smart thing to do for my long years as an MLS nerd, but expect a defender, expect behind that midfield as far as positions, because the defenders and the goalkeepers in this league tend to be on lower salaries. They tend to have less security in the starting 11. Like Carlos Vela is never going to be moved because he's their best attacker, right? But, you know, if they have three center backs that they kind of interchange, one of them is probably not going to be protected and could be a starting caliber center back. So I think going into it, I expect a starter. I expect at least depth players, and I certainly expect to see some goalies or defenders on that list.
We keep mentioning LAFC as an example. They are unfortunately not eligible in this draft, so we probably should have chosen another example. But it's a good reference point anyway.
And I would add on just one thing. I think to what you were saying, Chris, about like Claudio has talked about trades and that sort of thing, or potential trades, communication with other teams. I think because he has so much experience in this league and experience with NYCFC, I think we should expect the team to have a plan. They've had plenty of time to prepare. I think that they'll have a plan because the good teams clearly had a plan, like when they went into the draft. The teams that didn't do too well, like they didn't have the best plans. And two interesting, I think, examples of this were back when Atlanta and Minnesota were in the expansion draft. And Atlanta picked Clint Irwin, a goalkeeper from Toronto, and then immediately traded him back that same day, which might not make much sense, but they traded him back for a player who was also eligible in the expansion draft, plus some allocation money. So it was like they're getting more value out of it because they know that's a more valuable player, and they just make that swap.
Yeah, get some free money out of the deal.
Exactly. But then Minnesota, with their last pick in that expansion draft, they picked Femi Hollinger-Jansen, an attacker from the Revolution. And then 3 months after the draft, they traded him back to the Revolution for Bobby Shuttleworth, a goalkeeper, because they probably realized that they needed a goalkeeper. So I don't know. To me, that seems like maybe were they really thinking ahead as they were selecting these players?
Well, you know, too, man, like it's the same thing in talking about like, having a plan, but a different kind of plan. Like, if you look down the player list and when they were selected, it's really not that FC Cincinnati picked bad players. It's that they went into a system that lacked direction and a team that lacked unity. And the same thing, you know, with LAFC, Tyler Miller wasn't a standout goalkeeper in Seattle. He was a backup who didn't get a lot of game time, but he went into a system where they knew who they were. They knew the type of football they wanted to play. And I think as Austin fans, we should feel secure in that because we have a coach and a GM that have a very distinct plan. They've had a lot of time to get on the same page.
And experience in the league as well.
And experience in the league. So even if some of the players they pick aren't like, you know, huge headline names, they might be the right fit and end up being, you know, the next breakout star because they've been put in a better system for their skill sets.
All right, guys, should we jump into our draft?
Let's do it. Yeah,
all right. So we set up some rules for ourselves. We're each going to pick three players. We can't choose the same player, so we might have a list that we want. But if one of the Chris's take one of my players, I can no longer pick that player. We can also not repeat teams. And so if one of us chooses someone from a team, that team is off the table at this point. I told you guys I was going to bring a 20-sided die to choose who goes first, and I forgot to do that. So,
you know what? I say we just go by whoever's youngest. I don't know how old you guys are, but maybe it's me. I'm not sure.
You're just hoping with that one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm younger than both of y'all, so I'm just trying to go first.
Okay, Chris Wilhausen goes first, and we'll do it. Y'all want to do it like snake order again?
Sure.
So
sure.
Chris Haig will get two picks in a row?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right, so we also want to give a disclaimer. This is an extremely unpredictable process, and so we don't know who's going to be protected. We don't know who's going to be available. And so a lot of these players that we pick may end up not even being able, like they may not be available to be picked. It's more of a thought exercise to see like what kind of players we might be able to get. So please don't come rub all this in our faces whenever we're completely wrong.
No, I don't know why you're giving this disclaimer, man. I promise you, I know everything about this league. I'm pretty sure I nailed every pick when you referenced this after Austin picks all of my three players. Just give me a shout out on social media because it's going to happen.
We will. We'll post these later on and give a comparison. So, all right. With the first pick in the 2020 fantasy expansion draft, Chris Wilhausen, who you got?
Oh my gosh. It couldn't be easier, honestly. And I think it's one that everyone has on their list, or at least you should if you have half a mind to do so. Alex Bono from Toronto FC. He's a goalkeeper. He's American, so he won't take up an international slot. He's 26, which in goalkeeper years is like he's basically an infant still. He is amazing. He was their goalkeeper when they had that incredible run to the MLS Cup back with Giovinco and Altidore and that just amazing year. So like he is a trophy-winning goalkeeper at a young age and won't take up an international slot. And he's just been kind of on the outskirts this past year and a half. And so I expect he'll be available. And he's the first name on my list. He's such a solid pick. He could be the next Tyler Miller and then some.
Yeah, that he was actually first on my list as well. Another thing to mention is his salary is fairly high. It's $382,000 as of 2019, which I think it would likely be the same this year, which is, it's a lot of money for a backup keeper for them to just keep him on their books the whole time. Mm-hmm. So they may move some things.
It's significantly more than Westberg as well, right? Like he's making more money than their starter. Yeah, as a backup.
Right. Yeah, and so he may well be protected, but Toronto is going to leave some value unprotected. So I think Toronto is just a team to look at in general because they're going to have to leave some good players unprotected.
For sure.
All right, second pick goes to me. Oh man. Okay. I was watching some video of this guy earlier today, and I kind of fell in love with him. I'm going to pick Tesho Akindele from Orlando City. So in watching the video and just from having seen him play over the last few years, he's really smart with his movements off the ball. He does a pretty good job of dropping into midfield and kind of connecting with midfield players. But he can also play as just like a true nine and stretch the line and stay kind of on the back shoulder of center backs if you need him to. So he's really versatile, can play up top or kind of on the wing. He's probably not ever going to be the player to score 15 goals in a season, but a really good player to have on the squad. And I think also as of 2019, he was on like $100,000 a year or something like that. So pretty cheap as well. So I don't know if I would want him to be like a written in pin starter for Austin FC, but to have a guy like that on the squad available, I think would be a really good option for sure.
And I would also add that Orlando, like Toronto, is really deep. So Orlando doesn't have a ton of automatically protected players. So there's some good possible picks, I think, from Orlando. So that's a team that fans can definitely look towards as a possibility.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm really upset you picked someone from there because there's so much talent on there. And also, Tesha was such a good pick.
Orlando is another one, like Chris Haig mentioned. I have no idea who's going to get protected. Like, there's so many players that, like, I don't know, depending on what their strategy is going to be, there could be any of probably 6 or 7 players that I think are desirable that could potentially be unprotected from that team. So I would put my money that we will, not definitely, but I think there's a high chance we're going to take somebody from Orlando's roster in this draft.
I agree.
All right, Chris Haig, pick number 3.
All right, so I will pick Victor Ulloa from Inter Miami, who is 28, defensive midfielder. I think he would be an immediate starter in the midfield. He'd be a really solid player for us. He started in 17 games for Miami this year, played in 23, so he was a really important piece of their puzzle. Again, we don't know for sure whether he'll be unprotected, but they've got really don't have like automatically protected players at Inter Miami. So he easily could be. He's also from Texas. He came up through the FC Dallas system as a homegrown. So I think that would be kind of a cool storyline to get him back to Texas. And then it would also just be a really interesting trajectory for him because he played in Cincinnati and then he played in Miami. And if Austin were to select him, if they could, he would end up playing for 3 expansion teams in 3 years, which would be pretty fascinating.
Both of those players, Tesho and Ulloa, came from, once played for Dallas, which personally I love because I absolutely want that horrible club to watch their former players succeed with us. Every fiber of my being wants Tesho Akindele to score a hat trick against them.
So, going back to not knowing who they're going to protect, if we wanted a defensive midfielder and they do protect Victor Ulloa, if Miami protects Victor Ulloa, someone named Will Trapp could potentially be available to choose.
So, America's favorite center mid.
So if we're going the just like full on troll route, we can either pick an FC Dallas player or a former Columbus Crew player.
Oh, I love it. I really hope Claudio's as salty as I am and goes in that direction.
All right, Chris Haig, you're up again.
Awesome. So I will then pick a goalkeeper because, like we said earlier, I think there are some goalkeepers to be found in the expansion draft. So I'm going to pick Clint Irwin from Colorado, whose name came up earlier in a previous expansion draft. But he's an MLS veteran. He's played with a variety of teams. He actually won an MLS Cup as a backup with Toronto. So we mentioned Bono winning that cup with Toronto. I think there's a possibility he could be protected. It's kind of hard to say. He was their starter at the beginning of this season. But then Colorado picked up William Yarbrough, who's also 31. So they're the same age, but then Yarbrough ended up taking that starting role. So maybe they would end up leaving Irwin unprotected. And I think if they did, he would be a decent goalkeeper to start off with.
Absolutely. And $138,000 was his salary as of 2019. So pretty good value as well. My potential list is dwindling here. Let's see if I can actually make it to 3 picks. For my second pick, again, not 100% sure this guy is even going to be available, but I'm going to go to Philadelphia and choose Corey Burke. He is a striker. He's just recently returned to Philadelphia. They were forced to loan him out for like a season and a half or 2 seasons due to visa issues. So it wasn't because they didn't want him on the team. Jim Curtin actually really likes him. But they just recently got him back from Austria, I believe is where he was playing. He's like, if he does get protected, they have 3 quality strikers on that team. So Casper Shabilko and Sergio Santos have also played striker a lot for that team this year. And so if Corey Burke is protected, I would be surprised if they ended up protecting all 3 of those guys. They might, but yeah. if they did, Shabilko and Santos are both younger than Burke and are on higher salaries. So maybe it's a long shot, but I could very well see one of those three guys being available in this draft. I'm just going to take a gamble and say Corey Burke for my pick.
Yeah, Burke is a great example of like talent that should be protected, but there's just not enough slots too, you know, like, and it's worth noting too, he's exactly the kind of player that's going to thrive under Josh Wolf. You know, he's a big target man who can drop deep and set up play a little bit here and there and kind of be that center focus to stretch the line, just like Akindele. And, you know, he's, to me, just like screams that selection that maybe he's just a sub and he's down the list in Philly, but you give him more game time and he could easily pump out, you know, 5+ goals a season from the bench.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I would add one thing about Philadelphia. We know about their homegrown system. They've got a lot of young players, so they have a lot of automatically protected players. They do have one potential other goalkeeper that could be selected in Joe Bendick, who's a good goalkeeper, but he's the backup for Blake, right? So he's not going to get very much playing time, but he was a 3-year starter with Orlando and he's only 31. So
yeah, he'd be a good pick. Come play backup to Bono, you know, when we get both of them, and Bono's clearly better. So. Mm-hmm.
All right, Chris Wilhelmsen, you're up again.
All right, man. Well, I'm kind of following your suit with Corey Burke, but I'm just getting the better version. This is a bit of a long shot, but I'm picking CJ Sapong from Chicago Fire. He's on pretty decently high wages at just under 500 grand, but CJ Sapong is, like, if he is available, will be arguably the best pick on here because he's a striker who is incredible back in Philly. He often plays out of position as a winger in Chicago, which is important to note for two reasons, because A, when you look up his stats, you've got to think he's a bit handicapped on those goals because he's playing out wide rather than up top where he's best. But also it's worth noting because the big thing Josh Wolf keeps stressing is he wants players that can play in multiple spots. This is a dude who not only perfectly fits his striker profile from his days with the national team and the Crew, but he also has that versatility to him. So, you know, he does cost a bit more money and he is up there with, I think he's 31 years old, but he's a veteran presence. He's got a big personality. I heard he always adds to the locker room spirit really well. And he just fits right into the system. Like, he's one of those guys that they may, if he's available, may say, oh, we may not have to invest as much in a striker position because he really could be a 10, 15 goal striker if you give him the time in this league.
And actually, we know that he will be available because he kind of fell out of favor with Wiki, with their new coach in Chicago. And Chicago, I don't know when, but they're one of only two teams who have announced their roster decisions for next year. So they did not.
There you go.
They did not pick up Sapong's contract, so he's going to be out of contract, essentially a free agent. So he's on the table because Chicago doesn't want him. And if Austin could agree to a deal with him, then they could just pick him up through the expansion.
As I said earlier, don't question my insights to MLS. Look at that. I didn't even know. Guaranteed, he's going to be available.
Because he is a free agent, even if they don't take him in the draft, they could wait a day and then.
Right,
sign him as a free agent day, but they would have to compete at that point.
And he's a good exactly, and there's no way there's not 3 to 5 teams just like knocking on his door already. Like, it's a good example of why this draft is so cool, because it kind of gives us first dibs up to open the door, you know. And he's definitely not going to be short of phone calls to get his talent over to whichever club needs him.
But I think as we learn more over the next couple of weeks about those roster decisions with other teams, if a player is going to be a free agent, then maybe it's not worth the Austin using that expansion draft pick for him. Like, if they could communicate with that player and kind of have a verbal agreement, then maybe they could figure something out on the 16th when free agency opens up.
See, I just think it depends on the player. Cause if I'm looking at Sapong and I know he's going to be a free agent, I would absolutely spend a pick because I don't want to have to compete and get into a salary negotiation because, you know, someone else offered him more and now we've got to up what we would have paid in the first place and then go through that stresses too while we're trying to fill an entire other roster. You know, I would love to go in, check that box, know we're going to have at least some good striker depth and not go through all that mess of trying to deal with other teams getting his ear.
Right.
All right. I'm up, right?
Are we doing snake style? Does that mean
you get another one, right?
You get one more. Sorry.
Come on, Landon. I know you're intimidated by my picks, but like, can't keep that in mind.
Oh man, and I know you're gonna take my last pick too. I know you are.
Oh, you better believe it, because I'm going with Amro Turek from New York Red Bulls, which again, not just to like praises on myself, like Claudio, give me a ring because I'm killing it with this, but this dude would be a money signing. Like, it's one of those things with, you look at the Red Bulls and it just is unlikely they're going to protect three center backs with only 12 spots. So I do think he falls just below Tim Parker and Aaron Long, who are, you know, frequently started above him. But he's such an exciting pick because he's only 28. He's a left-footed center back who can also play left back if needed. So he's got that versatility. And also, if you follow soccer closely, a left-footed center back can be somewhat of a gem in the rough. So it's a good find when you can get one. He's got league experience. He's under 200K in a salary hit, which is nothing. And he's just got this big presence in the back. And when he did have a series of games with the Red Bulls, because I believe Tim Parker, Aaron Long had an injury, so he's getting a lot of starts, he was incredible. I mean, he really held down a great back line for them in their absence. So another one that could end up being a starter if given the time and finding a good defender with league experience and MLS, which is certainly not known for making good defenders or having good defenders, is a valuable pick. So I'm definitely going with him.
All right. In a hurried and ad-libbed pick, I'm going to take... Okay, I'm going to... So I was trying to decide between which of Vancouver's keepers was most likely to be available. So they've got Maxime Crépeau and then Hassall, the youngster who ended up being a superstar in the MLS's back tournament, and then Evan Bush. I think... Evan Bush is on the most money and he's the oldest. So I would guess he might be the most likely to be available. So I'm going to say,
I think Hassall is a homegrown as well.
Yeah. He's 21 and I don't know if he's officially a homegrown, but I would imagine he is, but so probably between Crépeau and Bush. So I'm going to take a flyer and say Evan Bush from Vancouver.
They've also got, they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, including Hassall, they've got 5 goalkeepers if this list is accurate, because they also have Isaac Bomer.
Brian Meredith was a pick in a recent
draft. And then Brian
draft.
Meredith, yeah.
I didn't realize he was there. Interesting. I think, was he one of LAFC's picks that they traded? I don't remember.
He was
picked by somebody.
He was selected by Inter Miami.
In Miami, okay.
Yep. And then traded to Vancouver for a super draft pick.
Okay, so... probably a keeper going to be available from Vancouver.
From Vancouver.
I think for a minute there, we were speaking a borderline different language of MLS terminology.
All right. I believe this is Chris Haig with the last pick.
Yeah, last pick. So the last pick, I'm not even convinced it's the best pick. He's not maybe the most well-known player, but I think it's an interesting pick and one that I mentioned last week when we talked, and that's Nico Hansen from Houston. And Nico Hansen is a right winger. He's 26, so he's not too old yet. We already have 2 wing players, right? We have some attacking players already, so maybe he's not necessary, but he could be a good depth piece. He's played a bit for Houston this year, not a ton. He's had 8 starts, 17 appearances, 2 goals and an assist. But I think the interesting thing about him is that he entered MLS in 2017 with Columbus. So he really got going with Columbus. He had 22 appearances in 2018. So Josh Wolf would know him from Columbus. And I think that could play a factor, right? The players that they know that they might be able to trust or already know what those players are about could play a factor in who they end up picking. So I think he's a player. There's not too many other players from Houston that I would necessarily want to pick, but Nico Hansen from Houston.
All right.
And I love it. I think, again, give me all the rival players. Give me all of them. I want all of them just netting goals week in and week out against our garbage rivals.
All right. Do we want to do a quick review of our teams? You can start, Chris Wilhausen.
Yeah, I mean, I think I clearly have the best one out of this. Like, it's not even a question to me. I don't know why y'all even tried. But Alex Bono, goalkeeper from Toronto, CJ Sapong, striker from Chicago, and Amro Tarek from New York Red Bulls, center back.
My team was Tesho Akindele from Orlando, Corey Burke from Philadelphia, and Evan Bush from Vancouver.
And then I had Victor Ulloa from Inter Miami, Clint Irwin, goalkeeper from Colorado, and Nico Hansen, forward from Houston.
All right. Do y'all want to list maybe some of the players that you had on your list but weren't able to pick because of the team limitation?
Oh, man. You know, there's a lot of crossover for sure from what y'all already selected, but a couple that weren't mentioned that I'd be interested to see is a man, I'm going to butcher this guy's name. Axel Højbjerg. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Well, I was looking at him and he was, I know him very well from fantasy several years ago. So I've heard his name pronounced various ways for sure.
Well, he's a giant center back currently at DC United. I really don't think they're going to protect him, but I believe he's like six foot seven,
actually.
Seven. Yeah, I looked never it up mind. Earlier he's today. Enormous. But, you know, it is. He's got league experience. He's not a bad player by any means. And sometimes it's nice to have that just like tree of a man on your 18 list, because, you know, I think when I think back to when Zlatan was in the league, one of the only center backs I was able to deal with him was someone that was his height. And a lot of teams lean on those big like body strikers up top, and having someone with that physicality and that that aerial ability can be a nice rotation piece for the back line. So I'd be interested to see him thrown in the mix for sure.
Chris, Hague, did you have any others that you wanted to mention?
Yeah. So one player from Orlando, another player that we last week thought, well, maybe he won't be protected, is Jegson Mendez, who's 23, defensive midfielder, really a box to box midfielder that I think would bring just a lot of like energy and athleticism to the midfield. He's from Ecuador and he plays with the Ecuadorian national team. And I lived in Ecuador for 4 years, so this is in part a big homer pick, and I would love to see them pick up an Ecuadorian player. But he was a pretty key player for them. He played in 19 games this year. But because he's young, I do actually think that he might be protected. He's only 23, so he could be a good piece going forward into the future. But if he's protected, then I think Orlando might not protect Uri Rossell, who is also a very good defensive midfielder that could be a great option. He's a little bit older, but I think he won an MLS Cup back in the day with Sporting Kansas City, I believe. So he's got a lot of experience and could be a great player as well.
So Chris, I want to ask if it came down to it between those two players or Victor Ulloa, who would you take?
Ooh, I'd take Ulloa.
I would take Rossell for sure.
I would take Rossell as well.
Yeah. I don't, again, Orlando's got too many good players to protect all of them. So someone good is going to be available. But if Uri Rossell is available, he would be my number one pick for sure.
Sure.
Well, I think I would take Ulloa in part just because of age. I don't have Rossell's age in front of me.
He's in his early 30s, I believe.
Yeah.
Maybe like 32. I think
Ulloa is 28. So maybe just get a little bit more time if he's playing well. And
for defensive mids, ain't nothing wrong with some dirty 30. Okay?
That's true. For sure.
Still got it.
The only one I wanted to mention on mine is Nick De Leon from Toronto. Again, he may end up being protected. He's still playing. He's played about half the minutes this year that he played last year, and is really flexible and can play really anywhere across the midfield, but usually plays out wide. But I think if he's available, he would just be a really strong veteran player that can play in a lot of different positions, which is something that Wolf has said that he values, is positional flexibility. So if I don't know that he will be available, but if he was available and say Bono, who we mentioned before, wasn't available, then I think De Leon would be a really solid pick.
Don't speak like that. Bono's got to be available, man. Don't ruin my dreams prematurely. Man, one other name I would throw out, and just because it is like just long shot enough that it makes sense in the MLS universe, but LA Galaxy have a fullback named Danilo Acosta, who is, I believe, 22. He's in his early 20s. he was an exciting signing when they got him last year, but had a major injury that sidelined him all year. And so I don't think they would waste a spot to protect him because he's been out injured. He should be back very soon from it. And he's a fullback that can play on both sides, which is really valuable. He's a highly rated young player in the league. I think it's like one of those gambles that could be really worth it, because if you can find a young fullback who can play in this well in this league and has that versatility to play on both sides, it could be a huge, huge get. And I don't, like I said, because of his injury, I don't think he'll be protected. So that'd be my super long shot guess.
And I would say too, like, it's interesting to think about those younger players. Like, it's just hard to predict younger players who might be in their low 20s, right? It's hard to know. And looking back at previous drafts, like, there were some really good players that were unprotected, but there were young players, and hindsight is 20/20, right? And so you never know, you might find some good players like that. And one other name that I found as I was looking through some names that we had thought might not be protected, is actually one player from Nashville, Alistair Johnston, who was a rookie this year, but he's only 22. And Nashville has had a really solid defense, right? And he's played right back for them, has had 15 starts. So he's ended up being like a pretty important part of their defense. But he's 22. It might be a little bit more of a gamble just because he's not the same type of proven player.
All right. Man, can I throw one question into the mix before we wrap it up?
Yeah.
So we know Reyna has talked about the possibility of a trade. If he were to get a player, which we'd have no idea who, right? But to trade for a team, knowing the depth of rosters and talent, what do you think that team would be that he'd trade to?
Oh, man. I think it's going to depend on the player, right? Just like what a player needs. And then also who's willing to buy. So, like, I would say, like, a team like San Jose could use some pieces, but they don't spend money. And so, you got to find the right player and then the right buyer for that player. And it sounds like he's already having those conversations. So,
right.
Who knows who it's going to be.
Yeah, that's really tough to say, because it also comes down to just like, it's not going to be even if they make a trade, it's not going to be for a player who's like one of the biggest names, like a DP or international or like great international player. It could be a really solid player, but it's not going to necessarily be a star that they're trading expansion.
I don't know, man, because LAFC traded for Simon and he was a big name in Montreal. You know, he wasn't
sure
Piatti, but he was a locked in starter and a big figure on that team.
Now you can always add on extra money to that trade. So
if they could trade for a really solid defender though, I would be very happy for that. Like, I think that Simon, or like thinking about Nashville, I mentioned they had a really good defense. Part of the reason was Walker Zimmerman, right? Who wasn't an expansion pick. They got him through other means. But if we could get a really solid veteran player like that to kind of center our defense around, I'd be pretty satisfied with that.
And Chris, you segued me perfectly into why I asked this question, because as we know, Reyna came from NYCFC, who have multiple top caliber defenders in this league. I would not be surprised if we see them leverage those connections to get one of those center backs.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of connections, we just hired an assistant coach from DC United. And then our other assistant coach came from the Dynamo, right? So we got firsthand knowledge from a lot of different places. This technical staff for Austin FC is very familiar with this league, and they're going to have a good idea of where that value lies. So I'm pretty confident in their ability to have a pretty solid expansion draft.
If I'm hearing you correctly, Landon, what you're saying is we're going to win MLS Cup next year. And frankly, I totally agree. Can't wait.
I love your optimism, Chris. All right. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. As Chris Haig mentioned before, that draft is on December 15th. So that's when we'll, as of that point, we'll have most likely 5 new players on the team. So we'll do a show pretty soon after that and kind of highlight these players and give you a rundown of who those guys are. So we'll also know if we got any of them right at all. So that'll be interesting to compare.
I already know, man. I already know. I f***ing nailed it. I'm ready.
We got a decent shot with 9 picks, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining me, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having us, man.
Thanks for having us on. Appreciate it.
All right. We hope you guys enjoyed our mock expansion draft. We'll do a show after the draft and cover a little bit more in depth the players that we actually do pick. So if this was a little bit too whimsical for you, then we'll have some concrete players to talk about here in a couple of weeks. But we'd like to remind you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We also encourage you to visit CapitalCitySoccer.com, where Troy Bryant and Zach Mason bring you the latest in Austin FC news, including player rumors, sponsorship updates, and more. We will be back next week with more Austin FC news. Until then, I'm Landon Cottom.
I'm Jeremiah Bentley.
We'll catch you next time.